What's up, guys? Coach Az, Way of the Warrior podcast. I believe it's episode 9, but I'll be honest with you, I've lost track. Apologies for the lack of uploads in terms of this podcast last week. One, it was just a bit of a mad week, but I won't use that as the main excuse. My main reason, I'll be honest with you, is I'm struggling to a certain extent, or at least I foresee the struggle of knowing exactly what else to talk about within this long-form discussion. Only because when you're discussing something like martial arts, it's like you need, or I guess this is true with any kind of podcast, right? You need some form of breaking news in order to discuss. Now, I've got the obvious option, which is take something like the UFC and discuss what's going on, because that then you've got a weekly feed of stuff to talk about. My concern with doing something like that is that you just become another channel that's discussing fights, and then eventually what you end up discussing is, you know, the dramas of the fights, what happens outside of the match, which I'm all up for. I just don't know if it's the direction I want to take this channel. I don't know if it's the reason that people subscribe to me necessarily or watch or listen to my content to hear more about UFC, Bellator, Glory kickboxing. And that's the other thing. I like to talk to all martial artists. So it's like, do I discuss BJJ tournaments? Is anyone watching Muay Thai? I don't know. So that's my one thing. Please comment below. Let me know what you would like me to discuss, what you'd feel about me introducing maybe just a section on that. You know, the current updated news. Maybe I try to keep it as wide a breadth as talking about different styles. Maybe not. Something for you guys to consider. If not, maybe I will just upload these a little less frequently and collect some things to talk about. Fortunately, we've certainly got something to discuss from the previous weeks, and that's the Olympics. And the Olympics brought up a whole bunch of things for us to have a chat about. So I thought, why not dive right into that? So let's start with Olympic martial arts. It's been quite a year for it. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this was the first year where karate was contested in the Olympics, which was quite a big deal. It was kumite, points fighting, karate, and kata, traditional forms, that was included. Previously, taekwondo has been in for the longest time. Judo has been in for the longest time. I count them as martial arts, but people might not. Wrestling and boxing are the combat sports that are in the Olympics. Now, here's the thing with both watching and enjoying / following these is because it's amateur sports, unless you're in one of these amateur sports, you tend not to follow these athletes outside of the Olympics. So as a good example, I don't follow the sport of taekwondo on the amateur scene competitively. I couldn't tell you who the number one guy is in taekwondo at any weight class, the number one girl, who's, you know, coming up in the ranks. I don't know. I don't follow it. I love the sport. I love the martial art. It's just not one that I stay up to date with. My club is a kickboxing club, so I'm very up to date on both amateur and professional, who the top guy is, who's coming up, who to look out for, who's on the rise. So for me, that sport is like interesting at all levels. When it comes to something like the Olympics, then I guess the focus needs to be, and it generally is, because that's why you end up watching things that you'd never otherwise watch, is you just follow your team. You follow your country. For me, it would be GB. And you figure out who the athletes are and you kind of root for them. And then maybe as you go through it, you see another athlete from another country and you like their style, you like their approach to something, and you kind of become a fan of them in that moment, and then you root for them as well. Maybe your country goes out a bit early, so then you pick the guy or the gal that you like the most other than your team, and you start rooting for them through to the final. It helps make it interesting, is what I'm saying. It's also difficult because I think taekwondo is the best example, maybe judo as well. If you're not familiar with the sport, you're familiar with the idea, but you're not familiar with the sport in the sense of the rules, it can be quite difficult to know what you're watching. Taekwondo so fast. It's such a fast-paced thing. And then suddenly, you know, the hand's gone up and a score's been given. And you, if you're a martial artist in general, you might be watching it and go, but I saw this, or I didn't see that. Like, what was that scored? So it can be a bit difficult to get into because you're not kind of, you haven't got that behind the scenes knowledge, the in-depth knowledge that might be required to really appreciate something. I was having a great discussion with a martial arts friend of mine recently. He's recently got into wine drinking. He's never drunk alcohol his whole life, as in through his 20s and 30s, mostly down to him being a competitive fighter and he just didn't feel like it benefited him to do so. But he's now retired and he's enjoying drinking wine. Not in the sense of he's become an alcoholic or anything, but he's got into the whole learning about the flavors, learning about the different types, the different grapes, the different methods, the different countries. And he said that through gaining a knowledge, he's gained a deeper appreciation for it. So whereas before he could just drink a glass of wine and go, yes, that's wine, and he'd enjoy it to a certain extent, he now has a deeper enjoyment because he has a deeper understanding of what he's drinking. And I think it's the same with martial arts. I think this is why sometimes sports like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu struggle with wider popularity. Because as a spectator sport for the layman, for someone who's not invested in the sport in particular, it can be very difficult to know exactly what you're watching. UFC, MMA, when you see someone get punched in the head and knocked out cold, we all understand what we just saw. That you don't need the commentator to explain it. The grappling, because it included with the striking, it's less often that they're just kind of, they're not, but what the layman would presume as rolling around on the floor, you don't see it as much. And then when you see someone's arm go around someone's neck and then they're like falling asleep, we all understand what's happened there. They got choked out. So it's more absorbable. Boxing, I think a lot of its popularity comes down to how simple a sport it is, in the sense that it's a punch coming straight at you, around you, or up underneath. Now, the beautiful science means that there's so much more to it in terms of what it takes to get that punch there. But anyone can watch it and understand, oh, he's hitting him more than he's hitting him. Therefore, he's a better boxer. Yeah, you don't need to understand the footwork or distance management or timing in order to see that. You just need to see his glove hitting his head more than his glove hitting his head. So I think sometimes these Olympic martial arts struggle a little bit in terms of getting the recognition they probably deserve, because people just don't really know what they're looking at. And the commentators, bless them, they do a great job of trying to explain it. But, you know, it's like you taking me to a car engine and trying to just there and then teach me how to repair it. I don't have enough experience in it or knowledge that one session is going to be enough to transfer the information. So I think that's sometimes one of the limiting factors about these things. I don't know if there's anything you can do about it. I enjoy sporting excellence in general. I've really been enjoying the gymnastics this year, again, because it's extremely translatable in the sense that you see someone do a double backflip or something, and you know that you can't do that. So therefore, it's just impressive instantly. You see someone holding the crucifix position on the rings, and you know in your mind that you couldn't just jump up and do that. So you have an instant appreciation for the sporting excellence of what these people are able to achieve with their bodies. That's my general view on it. The reason actually that I wanted to discuss the Olympics was this year it was announced that kickboxing, amateur Muay Thai, and Sambo would all be making their way into the Olympics. They have all received full IOC recognition, International Olympic Committee. These are the guys, these is the people in charge of basically determining what an Olympic sport is and what isn't. And where this becomes interesting is it gets onto the conversation of governing bodies. Now, for a lot of you, you might not find that interesting at all. That might be my biggest turn off of a conversation that you could ever imagine. But as someone who's deeply invested in a sport and in a martial art and who has to deal with this, I thought it might be an eye-opener to discuss governing bodies, the good, the bad, and the downright ugly about them. Because I think it's relevant. I think it's important. I think it doesn't get discussed enough. Most people have no idea what any of that means. So let's go through it. I'm going to talk about kickboxing, but only because it's where my knowledge is. But I know, for without shadow of a doubt, that this is how it applies everywhere else. So whether you are into karate, taekwondo, muay thai, doesn't matter. What I'm going to say here will apply to you. You'll just have to change the acronyms in terms of what the governing bodies are called. But to save me jumping all over the place, I'm going to discuss kickboxing as it's where I've got the knowledge and you can kind of cross-reference what I'm saying to what you do. Let's start with what a governing body is. The kind of idealistic concept of a governing body is that it takes a given martial art, in my example, kickboxing, and it puts it under a nice, clean umbrella of which everyone understands what kickboxing is. What are the rules? What is allowed? What isn't? What's to be expected? And the idea being that you make it this universal thing that this, when you say the word kickboxing, this is what it means. You can already see the problem here because when I say the word kickboxing, that can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. Points fighting, continuous fighting, K1, Muay Thai, people will see that and often say that's kickboxing. For a lot of people, they just have no idea what any of this means at all. So the objective of a governing body is to place it all basically with a neat bow on it. And the reason that they'd want to do that, and again, I'm talking idealisms here. The reason they might want to do that is to help increase exposure and help make it more widely recognizable. That it's then more digestible. Because instead of it being this niche little thing that no one really knows about, and if you went over here and then you went over there, it would be very different. It becomes, if you went here or you went there or you went to this other country, it would look very much the same, which allows you to know or build a confidence in knowing that you like it because you keep seeing it again and again and again. Boxing is boxing, you know, in the sense that it's a jab, it's a hook, it's an uppercut. It's moving around with these gloves on. So when you see it, regardless of what the governing body is or what the fight is or who the fighters are, you know you're watching boxing because everything looks the same. Kickboxing and other martial arts for the longest time, and it still continues to be an issue, and I think it will be for a very long time, and we're going to get into why, you will see a very big, wide mix of what it is. From what do they fight in terms of equipment? What do they wear? What weight are the gloves? Do they have a head guard? Is it a certain type of head guard? What kind of ring do they fight in? Do they fight in a ring? Do they fight in an area? Do they fight on mats? How big is the area? How big is the ring? It's all these questions. How many referees? How is the fight scored? How is the judging done? How long are the rounds? All of these variables mean that it's very difficult to understand. I said I'm going to talk about kickboxing, but I'm going to just reference something everyone understands. If you watched MMA, there's something called the unified rules of MMA. And the idea of that is that regardless of where you fight, Bellator, UFC, ONE Championship, they fight, well, maybe not ONE Championships, I don't know if they fight under the unified rules, but you fight under these unified rules, and the idea is everything then is the same. 5-minute rounds, 3 rounds, 5-minute rounds, for 5 rounds for championships. The rules then, regardless of what you're watching or where you're watching, are largely the same. The refereeing is largely the same. The judging is largely the same. It's easier to follow. Going back to what we were talking about with Olympic sports, it's easier, it's quicker for you to gain an understanding of what you're watching and build an appreciation and therefore become a fan and become invested within it. Kickboxing has tons of organizations, as do many other martial arts. I'm going to list a few just off the top of my head. WACO, IAXA, WKA, WKC, the list goes on. They are endless. And here's why. This is the deep, dark secret of most martial arts, right? And people can agree to disagree with me on this, but I've watched this happen for years, and I know that this is the reason why there are so many associations. It's all down to an issue of ego and power. Let's say that there was one organization to start with, all right? Kickboxing organization. And it had a bunch of guys in it. They've all liked kickboxing. One guy becomes the world champion. Okay, he's the best in the world. No one can beat him. But this other guy really wants to be the world champion. But he can't beat this guy. He just can't. Number two can't beat number one. It's just not going to happen. He's got his number. No way, Jose. He could go down a weight class. He could go up a weight class. He doesn't want to do that either. He wants to fight at this weight class. His friend over here says, why don't we start our own association? And he says, yeah, great. All right, let's start our own association. Invite a bunch of people to it. Run a world championships out of it. So now we've got World Kickboxing Association. Kickboxing Association, World Kickboxing Association. So this guy goes and fights in his own world championship. Guess what? He wins. He is now a kickboxing world champion. He has that title. He's got the trophy. He'll have the picture on the podium. He'll have the memory. He'll be able to put it on his website for his club and tell everyone, I'm a world champion. This basically happens again and again and again and again and again and again. And you end up with all these different championships. This is why everyone and their mother knows someone who's a world champion or a European champion or a British champion. And it's all just very diluted. It's a real shame. There's other reasons that this happens. Here's another reason, okay? Go back to original association, okay? Original association started up by this guy. Everyone pays a small membership fee to be part of this club, okay? So you, every club who's in it, who wants to be recognized under this association because of the reputation that they have for being the best. And if you're associated with them, it means you're a good club, it means you're part of something. You join it, you pay your membership fee, and you know, someone at some point notices this guy is receiving a lot of membership fees. You know, he's doing all right for himself, surely. Not all of this money is just going back into the association. He's driving a nice BMW. What would happen if I started World Kickboxing Organization and I started taking membership fees? Because this is the other thing, right? Maybe they want to say, I want to be president. Oh, well, sorry, the president, there already is a president. He's going to be the president for the next 10 years. But I want to be the president. Okay, well, you can be the vice president. I don't want to be vice president. I'm a black belt. I'm a world champion kickboxer. I want to be the president. Well, you can't be the president. All right, well, then fine. I'm going to go over here and start my own association. And guess what? I just made myself president. You see what happens? And then you got it all over again with where you now you've just got all these presidents, right? The president of this federation, the president of this federation, you know, the chairman of this federation. And a lot of them are amateur, and some of it is just about money, and some of it is just about status. Now, I am aware that so far I've just been kind of shitting on them. And I don't actually mean that to come across, but I'm just trying to make it clear to you in case you wondered why are there so many. That's generally the reason. The beauty of the Olympics, I guess, one of the positives that come out of it, and there's a lot of negative, but one of the positive is that when a sport gets into it, it gets into it under one association. Again, I'll use kickboxing. WACO, which is what my club is under, we are the association, the organization that has received full IOC recognition. We are now the Olympic representatives for this sport, which means all the other federations, if I'm being honest, it does take away from them a little bit in the sense that the WKA, which is another big one, will never be the Olympic sport of kickboxing, which again, to the layman, is widely recognized as the highest sporting achievement anyone can achieve in any sport on the amateur level. Yeah, the gold medal at the Olympics, everyone understands what that is and what that represents. So if you want to be part of that for the sport of kickboxing, you have to be under the umbrella of WACO. Hopefully what that does is it unifies everyone. It brings everyone together under the same banner, and we all work towards the development of the sport. Now, you can argue, and it's a valid argument, that what you create there is a monopoly, and what you create there is a narrow-minded approach to something of which it will then lack evolution, because it's all under one rule set, it's all done one way, it's all managed by one person, and therefore it's going to lack the diversity that might come from having multiple associations. But I don't think multiple associations are going anywhere. I don't think everyone was working or gearing towards being an Olympian. So I think a lot of people will be very happy with still being the world champion in kickboxing, even if it's not under what would now be considered the top banner, the Olympic banner, which would be WACO. Perfectly fine, all right? By the way, whilst I represent WACO and I do so proudly, I am not here to shit on any other association or claim superiority over them. I'm trying to just state facts in terms of what's occurring. Take of it what you will, but please don't take any offense from this. I don't mean anything by it. I'm not saying that WACO is the best. I'm saying that what they have done is they've put themselves in a position through what they've gone, and again, some people will disagree with what they've done in order to become the Olympic representative for our sport. And that's kind of where I wanted to move it on to next, but I'm gonna get to that. Let's stick a little bit longer with associations, because I wanted to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And since I've done so much kind of bad talking, let's talk some goods, because people think there isn't any, but there certainly are. Let's talk about some of the benefits of whether you are a coach running a school, being under an association, or you're a student training at a club, and you've heard this term getting thrown around, you know, that you're part of WACO, WKA, IBJJ, whatever it might be, and you're like, I don't actually know what that means. I have no clue. My coach just says I've got a membership for them, and I got to pay this renewal once a year, and I think he's just trying to take some more money from me. This is something I deal with every year. I hate it, and I'm going to get onto that in the bad later. But what it means is that your club is under this umbrella, which should mean that they're held to a certain standard and a certain expectation in order to hold that name. So in order for me to have this badge on my t-shirt, you know, validly and be allowed to wear it, and to call my school a WACO kickboxing school, and to put it on my certificates and whatever else it might be, my syllabus has to fulfill a certain criteria, as in what I teach needs to fit under the umbrella of what they define to be kickboxing. I can go beyond that, I can, but it needs to be recognized within the sport, okay? I need to ensure that I've got public liability insurance, which WACO actually handles for us. I need to make sure that my instructors are DBS checked, background checked. If you're in America, you might just call it a background check. I need to make sure that we've got valid first aid certificates. I need to make sure that if I had my own property, it's got the right insurances, the right licensing in place. I've got a responsibility beyond my own personal moral responsibility of how I want to run my school. But I'm held accountable by a higher power, by this governing body, to be doing things the right way, you know, to be doing things properly. Anyone can start a martial arts school, guys. You could tomorrow find a space, find a hall, give yourself a name, go buy yourself a gi and a black belt, and start teaching whatever martial art you want, and you wouldn't be breaking any laws at all. At all. You wouldn't actually even need to have any form of insurance or licensing in order to do it. None of this is required by law, in the UK at least. You can just do it. It's just an activity, right? But you should do it properly. You should have public liability insurance. You should be valid first aid trained. People who help you teach, especially if it's coming to children, should have a background check so that you know that they're not a paedophile. You know, it sounds really obvious when I'm saying it on here, right? But you would be amazed, amazed how many martial arts schools are out there with none of this in place. Because there's no accountability. Because all of this is an expense, by the way. Being part of WACO costs me money. Having insurance costs me money. And I've never, touch wood, I've never had to use my insurance. I hope I never have to use my insurance. But I still got it. I've never had to use my first aid training to the extent of saving someone's life. And I hope I never have to. But I still have it. I get a background check done on myself and on everyone I work with every year, even though I'm like 99% positive that everyone I work with is legit and clean, but you still got to do it. It doesn't matter what you think or what you feel because you got to do things properly. And it goes beyond that. There's now what we call the safeguarding code in martial arts, which is, again, a separate third-party body, government funded, to ensure that your martial arts school is doing enough to safeguard children and adults whilst present in training. At the moment, and I don't think this will be the way for the long term, but at the moment, it's an optional thing that you can go and do, and it takes time. You've got to invest a lot of time to get all these processes done, so that you can have this little badge on your website and on your leaflets and on, you know, you appear on this map for the safeguarding code. But you should do it anyway, right? But when there's not a perceived accountability, people won't do it. People should pay their taxes, right? People should pay their taxes. If the government wasn't around demanding it, you can guarantee less people would feel inclined to pay their taxes. But because the government is there enforcing taxes, guess what? We all pay the taxes, right? That's what I'm saying, is a governing body can help hold you accountable. Now, sometimes, again, kind of shifting between good and bad, we might not like that in the sense that, let's use my example of WACO. WACO recently, and I believe it was partly in an effort to ensure their Olympic recognition, they introduced elbow pads for points fighting. And I believe, and anyone from WACO, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but this actually came off of an injury where someone went to throw a blitz. A blitz is a technique where you push forward, you attack with your arms, and often your elbow can be exposed. And the elbow struck someone across the eye, and I think it caused quite a serious cut. And I think that was the last straw where they decided that in competition anyway, elbow pads would be compulsory. And a lot of people from a lot of WACO schools pushed back and said, no, I don't want elbow pads. It's diluting the sport too much. It's unnecessary. And WACO said, tough. If you want to compete in points fighting under a WACO tournament, these are now compulsory. Guess what? Everyone wears elbow pads now. It's not so much of a big deal. Most people don't even think about it anymore. But at the time, it was quite controversial. And people would, to this day, argue that it dilutes the sport because it's like we're overgoing with the... I don't know if you can overgo with safety, especially when you're talking about kids fighting each other. Like, it's already questionable enough, kids fighting each other, right? But if we're going to do it, we should wrap them up in as much foam as possible to ensure they don't hurt each other. Can we all agree? I don't know. Clearly not, because people get upset about it. But the, you know, WACO enforced it, and it's now a thing. Does it increase safety? I'd like to think so. Don't really know. You kind of trust your governing body to make the right calls to look after you and your members. You get a say in it. You know, you can file an appeal. You can go talk to the head of your country, you know, WACO GB, and they can relay it to the president of WACO at the next meeting. You have an input, but they make decisions for the sport. Good, bad, indifferent. That's what happens. Other benefits of being part of it, and here's like a really recent one off of this, through WACO getting IOC recognition, again, I'm talking about the UK, but apply this to anything that you do, we should hopefully be receiving recognition from Sports England. And what that means on an amateur level is funding. And what that means is it helps support clubs and the next generation of the sport to continue and flourish. I know a lot of people who run non-profit schools. They do it purely as a non-profit. It's maybe they've, you know, retired or they earn their money elsewhere and they run their organization as a non-profit. And things like government funding don't really exist for our sport. Karate, Taekwondo, where they're already Olympic sports and already Sport England recognized, they receive a level of funding that we don't. So through Wacko going through all these necessary steps to become an Olympic sport, it opens up funding to our sport, which helps to preserve us and our longevity. It allows us to teach for longer. You'll be amazed how many great martial art teachers have been lost because they just couldn't afford to teach anymore. They weren't good businessmen. They weren't good at running a business. And what that meant was that although they were brilliant martial artists and brilliant instructors, they run out of the funds in order to be able to teach. Sport England supporting you as a British sport means that you could be the best coach in the world and not necessarily have the greatest grasp of how to make money from it, but they could support you in training young children, in training Olympians, and in preparing people and continuing to provide and give back to your sport in a way that might have otherwise not been possible had you been left to your own devices. So I think that's a good thing. I think things being enforced that help protect children and adults and provide a nice training environment are all beautiful things. The bad, I've kind of discussed some of it already. Yes, it can mean a lot of people, when I posted in Reddit that we'd received Olympic recognition, a lot of people on the kickboxing Reddit said, oh, watch the sport get diluted now. And I don't know if they're necessarily wrong in the sense that, yes, it does mean that things are going to be dialed back in certain ways. Again, mostly from the point of view of ensuring safety, which I think should be a top priority. I don't think it's something we should just put our nose up at because it's combat. But yeah, it might not be as hardcore as it was back in the 80s. But what was going on back in the 80s and 90s in martial arts was horrendous. It was basically abuse. Like when I look back onto me training as a kid, and I trained in a very good school, a very sensible school, but none of that would fly now. You know, it wasn't the way you would work things. People were kicking each other wearing shoes. Like, just for one example, you'd put on all your sparring gear, you'd put your foot pads on, but underneath you'd still have your shoes on because we weren't training on mats, we were just training on hard floors. And that was just considered perfectly normal. There was no one in the room who was turning around going, is it a good idea for that kid to kick that kid in the face with a rubber-soled shoe? Is that sensible? But in the 90s, that was all the rage. You know, I wasn't like, oh, is this just us? Because we'd go around, we'd train all over the country with people from all different schools, from all different associations. Guess what? No one had mats and everyone trained in shoes and no one took their damn shoes off when they were putting their foot pads on. The weird guy was the guy who did it. He took his shoes off. You know, why are you taking your shoes off? He's like, oh, I don't want to kick anyone with my shoe. And we're like, yeah, but you're going to kick us with your dirty foot. It was a weird time. I don't miss it. I'm glad we got mats. I'm glad we train barefoot all the time now. But people are like, you know, yeah, back in the day, we used to train with our shoes on. Like it's like that was the way to do it. Like that was, no. We got to evolve, guys. We got to move forward. I don't think that any of that's right. So there is bad in that sense sometimes. And yeah, the licensing is a pain in the butt. Like every one of my students needs to carry a valid Wacko license, which expires once a year. And it costs them a fee of which I don't necessarily take a profit on. Which means that I've got the extra administration of requesting them to pay it, ensuring that they pay it, and then telling Wacko that they've paid it so that they can update their records. Now, without them being licensed, they're not covered by my public liability insurance. So if something really bad did happen, I wouldn't have coverage on that student should something happen. So it's in my interest to make sure that they have it, but not financially. And not necessarily morally either, because, you know, like we live in the UK, we got the NHS, you know, healthcare's free. It's not that, but you got to have insurance. You got to look after these people. But in their interest, in from their point of view, they don't even see the value necessarily because A, it's hard to explain that to them. They just want to kickbox, right? They just want to come and train. They're not perceiving dying and I'm not teaching in a way where the chances are anyone's going to die. But that's something that public liability insurance considers because those are extreme cases of martial arts, very extreme, should never happen. And we were required to have people insured and have them licensed. But the way they see it is, I'm just saying, can I have another, whatever it is, 20 quid from you? And they're like, I just paid my monthly fees. I don't really want to pay any more money out. Yeah, but your license has expired. Well, has it? Because everything looks the same. I'm still here. It's like, and then, so here's what goes, right? You're not licensed. I can't really let you train anymore. So I then have to, like, I might lose you as a student, lose my income because you won't renew a license. So you can see where, like, as a club, you can see where people are like, you know what? I don't want to be wacko licensed anymore. I'll just go get public liability insurance. Still insured, right? And I don't even need to do that. I won't even get insurance. Putting all this money in your pocket, but you're not doing the right thing. You're not looking after your members. You're not looking after your instructors, you know, who put themselves at risk by teaching this stuff. There needs to be protections in place. These are all good things. And public and governing bodies provide them, but it does provide a nuisance. But that's really all it is. It's a nuisance that you have to plan for and have administration in place for to ensure the welfare of your members and your club, which should be more than worth it. You know what I mean? But this is the reason that you'll hear this argument against it. Here's a tip. Here's an association to avoid at all costs. Any association that at any point mentions no politics. Yeah? We are a modern martial art associations with zero politics. This goes back to where these associations come from. Zero politics means I was part of a club and I was trying to move up in the hierarchy of things to have more power and more responsibility. The option to do so wasn't provided to me by the association, so I've started my own. And my motto is no politics. There's no politics. You're chatting absolutely out of your ass. There's no way for it not to have politics because it's an association, because it's got members, because it's going to need a hierarchy in order for it to have structure, in order for it to provide value to its members. It has politics, guys. So if you're running away from the politics, I understand you wanting to do your own politics. You don't like the, you know, that's why we have different political parties, right? This guy stands for this, this guy stands for that, that's fine. But there isn't a party that stands for no politics. And if there is, no one supports them because it's a ridiculous notion. Like in modern society, politics, although it's a dirty word because of politicians who are just, you know, liars. They're just money-grabbing liars. And at the moment, we have no time for politicians. But politics, the idea of it, is a necessity to any organization. If you go to work, you deal with workplace politics. If you've got a family, there are politics within your family in terms of the dynamics and who approaches who and who handles what. It's politics. And you've got it in martial arts. Sometimes it goes the wrong way. Sometimes the wrong guy gets promoted because he knows a guy, because he grew up with a guy, not necessarily because he's the right guy, girl for the job. Okay? Some people are just in the right place at the right time, and that's why they get to move up the rankings. And it's not fair, and it's not right, and stuff should be done about it. But just running away to start your own association, I don't think is necessarily the solution. I think if we all could discuss it more and come up with more guidelines on how you move up the ranks, whether that be as a referee or an official or to get onto the board of directors, whatever it might be, in order to have more influence and provide more in terms of the decisions, I think we should have that clearer. The one thing to understand, especially in amateur sports, is the majority of these people aren't getting paid. So if you're in it for a payday, don't bother. Like, wacko costs me more money than it makes me. I could make more money personally not being part of them, but my morals and my ethics and my wanting to give back to the sport trumps my wanting to make money off the sport. I enjoy the fact that I'm able to make profit and that I'm able to feed my family and sustain myself through my martial arts. But I won't sacrifice my ethics and moral values in order to do so, which is why I believe personally WACO is the association that I want to be under, the organization that I want to identify with, and that I agree in doing my part to move them forward because I think they do what's right for my sport. Personal opinion. Feel free to disagree. I have no issue with it. I'm always up for the discussion, but that's how I feel on it. So guys, this is probably the most boring episode of a martial art podcast that you could ever hear. But for any of you that were just mildly interested in what a governing body is and what it does, I hope I've shed some light on it. to summarize, I don't think they're a bad thing. I think like anything else, they can be misused. They can be abused. They are systems, and systems can be abused. Rules can be bent and broken. But I do think they provide a lot of value to sports. I do think they provide a level of clarity on the rules. I think, for example, going back to boxing, one of the big issues is that there's four big governing bodies, and at any time there's four world champions at one weight class, and that dilutes the meaning. The UFC is the biggest body in MMA, and everyone knows, whether they're going to admit it or not, that if you're the UFC champion, you're the true champion. And I think there's something to be said for that. There's something to be said for if you're any other champion, you are one below the UFC champion. Does it mean you're the best in the world? Maybe not. But that title is the one that would gain you the recognition as the best in the world. I think there are fighters in Bellator who could be UFC world champions, but without becoming, will not receive the same accolades, the same respect as those who hold that title. And I don't think that that's wrong, by the way. I think that should be the pursuit. Again, it can't be everyone gets a gold medal. Everyone gets a participation trophy. No. There needs to be a clear champion because it provides a value. The Olympics are the Olympics. They're the top of amateur sport, and the Olympic champion is the best. It doesn't matter who didn't take part, who pulled out, who's at your gym. Whoever is the king of that, the queen of that, they are the best. And we should know who the best is. There should be an opportunity for people to compete to be the best. And it should be undeniable. And if you want to deny it, help yourself, but no one's going to listen to you because it's undeniable. There we are, guys. Martial arts in the Olympics and governing bodies. Please let me know what you want me to discuss on the next episode because I like doing them. I enjoy sitting here talking to you guys, but I don't want to just loop the same stuff over and over again because how many times can we talk about nutrition for martial arts or training tips for this. I'm doing those on the YouTube channel anyway. The videos I do every week will have that kind of content. What would you like in the more long form discussions like we're doing today? Hit like, hit subscribe. If you're listening via a podcast platform, please leave us a review if there's an option. A nice positive one would be nice of you. Share us with your friends and I will see you on the next one. Peace.